I'm going to ask you this only once. Do you or do you not know about the birds?
Because everybody's heard that the bird is the word. Bird. The bird's a word. Bird. The bird is a word. Well, a bird. The bird's a word. Well, a bird. Well, a bird is a word. Well, a bird. The bird's a word, a well, a bird. Well, a bird is a word. Chris, don't you know about the bird? Meg, everybody knows that the bird is a word. Well, a bird. The bird is the word. Hey, guy behind the counter, the bird is the word. Hey, frightened little child, the bird is the word. Lady on the toilet, the bird is the word. Hey, don't you know about the bird?
Sure, everybody knows that the bird is the word.
Well, a bird. The bird's a word, well, a bird.
Again, I love repetition.
Well, a bird. The bird's a word, 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 Brian, don't you know about the bird? Well, Peter's gonna tell you about the bird, well, a bird. The bird's a word, well, a bird. Surfing!
Oh my God, Peter, are you all right?
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to what stands to be a very, very special episode of Hey Kids Comics. I am your host, as always, Andrew Farmer. With me is the Jedi Cole Houston.
Good evening, and a special squaw to you.
Strap in, ladies and gentlemen. This is our Thanksgiving issue of Hey Kids Comics, and when we were kicking around the idea to do a Thanksgiving issue, we wanted to do something a little special, so we started, kicking the idea ball around a little bit, and we didn't want to do the traditional, you know, what are you thankful for? You know, we're most thankful for you guys listening. That's what we're thankful
for.
Absolutely. Hard to fill an hour with that without sounding pandering and sad.
We would come across as far sadder than we truly are.
That's right. So you know, we kind of worked our way through any kind of Thanksgiving comic specials. There aren't a lot. They kind of wait for that for Christmas. We kind of went through, you know, all this stuff, and we landed on an idea of what you know, icons from that particular holiday, and the one that kept coming into our heads was the idea of the bird. Gather around, we're going to eat some bird, we're going to carve up some bird.
Yeah, it's like Turkey Day, it's all, you know, yeah, like you said, you know, we're going to gather around the bird, etc., give your family the bird.
Right. So what we did was we set out to do an entire Hey Kids Comics on the idea of bird comic characters. Those winged wonders of the comic book. I don't think we're ready for what we came across.
That is so true. We got into this with kind of a playful, let's talk about, you know, you got your obvious, your Hawkmans and your Angels and your Hawk Girls and your Hawk Kids and your Hawk Boys and, you know, the Hawk family.
Right. Anything, but, yeah.
We had no idea what was truly out there.
What was coming for us. So, you know, we set out to start doing some research on this, and we were amazed at the length and breadth of bird-themed characters in comics. And then we started thinking about bird-themed characters, and how early on did we start seeing bird-themed characters, and what bird-themed characters were all about,
and why do we embrace the bird theme?
Right.
Why is that so prevalent?
And then we started thinking about who comics are written for, and how long. So the research kind of led us to this idea that as long as there has been mankind, as long as people have existed on the face of this earth, you know, thinking, reasoning, a pattern recognizing people, there's been a bird mythology. There's been this idea of bird folklore and birds being larger than life, and you know, why do you think that is, Cole?
Partly, I think it is very much something ingrained in us culturally as human beings. you know, you can imagine primitive man looking upon the bird as a very powerful entity, and you go and look at certain cultures, and birds are, deified, frankly, because they have something we can't have.
Sure.
Until the Wright brothers hauled off.
And played God.
Yeah. But, the thing about it is, if you look at, say, ancient Egypt, many of the key gods of Egypt, the more powerful, the more well-known, Ra, the sun god, and Horus, who was the son of Osiris, if I'm not mistaken, and I'm sure if I'm wrong, somebody somewhere is cringing.
And writing, and currently writing an email.
That's right. And, you had Thoth, who was a powerful entity, who was like based on an ibis. And so, birds were very much a big part, and animal symbols are always a big part of that ancient culture. And so certainly the birds are not going to be left out because, as we said, the birds can, haul off and disappear.
Right, and I think that's an important, throughout history, birds have been represented as messengers, as tricksters, and I think that's part of it, is the fact that,
like that wily pigeon from Stop That Pigeon.
Stop That Pigeon! It's because of that. It's because there's, until there were, ornithologists that set out to study birds in a big way.
You made it a science.
The idea of birds being there 1 second and gone the next, there was no pattern you could really follow, mainly because we couldn't follow. It was very hard, let's say, for the Native American, for the American Indian to follow a hawk wherever the hawk were to go. It would come as a portend, that's what
absolutely.
It became recognized
as. You have the powerful iconography of the owl in ancient culture, because it is a night bird, and it comes out in a time when that's not a good end of the clock to be on. Night was always the time when you hid away, and then the night creatures were all often looked upon as those of evil. That's where evil resided, was in the night. And also you have to imagine it was kind of mystifying to early peoples all over the world when certain birds would, appear with the seasons.
Right.
And might often have, and in some cases, undoubtedly represented those seasons, because, as they say, gone away is the bluebird. Here to stay.
Is the new bird. which, by the way, side note, amazed me. Since being in Texas, I went to the Fort Worth Zoo recently, and they have a section of the Fort Worth Zoo, an actual aviary area, like a cordoned sanctioned area for the robin, and I was like, really? I was like, are you serious right now?
Let's see a migrate now.
Like, I'm from Ohio. We have robins all the time. We're like, really? We're going to have robins at the zoo? This is the squirrel and or chipmunk, depending on if they dig a hole.
Well, it's funny because I was at a zoo myself one time, and there was a little section of Australian birds that had kind of an open area, and most of them stayed well on their side of the little the low fence there to keep the unwashed public out of their habitat. But this one, it was like some sort of Australian pigeon that was perched on, the fence there. And I put my hand out and hopped on top of my finger and stood there for a good 10 minutes. I was afraid to move. This thing just sat there regarding me with this big black eye.
Right.
And then I decided, you're decidedly uninteresting. And then it flew off and perched inside the habitat side of the fence. And I remember imparting that story to a friend in Australia who was amazed that, why would anyone, the curator of a zoo, go to the trouble of getting a bird that's common as mud?
Right.
And, it's one of those things where it just, a lot of these animals become less exciting.
But here's the other thing, right? That this leads to an interesting point pertaining to the show, is the animals that they generally have at the zoo are not animals that anyone in any populated area is going to is going to see on a regular basis. You don't often see a rhino. You don't often, you know, even if you're in a populated area like Ohio, you know, like Cincinnati or Dallas, you're not going to see.
Unless in some dystopian future, right. Like 12 monkeys, you generally don't see the African wild animals on the street.
Or you don't even see bobcats. Or
that's so true.
Even if you go into the wilderness, chances are you're not going to see a bobcat. It makes sense to have a bobcat or a mountain lion at a zoo.
You go deliberately looking for them and never find them.
But at the zoo, in the aviary, you can see birds that will regularly perch on Stu Balk's back porch. You can see a robin. You can see a turkey vulture, which if you go anywhere where there's dead shit, you're going to see a turkey vulture.
If you go down this one particular street in this rural area outside of Austin, you can, in the right season, you can find them perching in trees by the hundreds, which is creepy and
exactly.
Once.
So why are we drawn to any and all birds? Like, you know, we go to the zoo to see wild animals and birds that we could see anywhere, mainly because birds don't give a shit and they will go anywhere. But we are drawn to this idea, and I think the real idea, regardless of how much we want to talk about the deification of the bird or birds in folklore, or birds as, you know, birds being viewed as messengers of the gods or birds being viewed as literal messengers or portents, it's their ability to fly. And it's something that I've always thought, you know, it's not a superhero that comes, or it's not a superpower that immediately comes into my mind as like the best superpower, but it certainly ranks in the top three of anyone's superpowers. So the most obvious way to give somebody the ability to fly is to give them wings. And where do we get our wings from? We get those wings from birds. When we visualize that.
Actually, you get two choices. Literally, if you are going to be a flying character in comics, there is a pretty distinct dichotomy. The bird is often the favored one.
Right.
And generally, the good guys almost exclusively are always going to have the bird, the feathered bird wing. However, there is also the bat wing.
Yes.
So you do have your bat or pterodactyl style
wing. And whatever you do, don't go to Urban Dictionary and look up bat wing.
That's a whole different kind of bad news. But the thing about it is, if you know, what makes the feather of the bird-winged character is more appealing than the membrane of the bat or dinosaur-winged character.
Well, also,
this softness, there's this comfort. It's sort of the angel wing.
That's what I was going to say.
It's angels and devils,
exactly.
Basically.
Whenever angels have been depicted, they're always depicted as having these giant, beautiful bird wings. And devils and demons have these weird bat wings. And so it's another deification of the bird that we vision, you know, the most holy of holy messengers and smiters and destroyers and lovers and givers of light as birds. You know, it's amazing to me that something so simple in a world that, you know, Cole and I immerse ourselves pretty heavily in comic books. Like, we have for a long time. Like, we have, you know, we've been given our mythology. It was handed down from our fathers and their fathers, from spinning racks and shoeboxes under beds. But this is something that people hold so voraciously that like we were talking about before the show, that when you consider the amount of bird-created characters and you compare those two, they stand on the same plane as your Supermen and your Wonder Women and your Flashes and your Norse gods, just guys with wings.
Yeah.
Like, that's amazing.
Sometimes that's all you need. I mean, some get to augment it with, claws or, additional strength or martial prowess or pistols or, you know, whatever you might need to go. But in some cases, it's just a pair of wings.
Right. So, So yeah, I mean, there's an interesting, and we could go on for 2 hours about the mythology of the bird and the American Indian mythology of the bird. I remember learning about that from old Foxfire books that my dad would bring home. You know, there's an old Hopi, or is it Hopi or Navajo? I don't remember which. Maybe Apache. Actually, I think it was Apache. Owlman.
Okay. Yes.
There was an Owlman mythology. You know, there's the Thunderbird, which exists all across the Great Plains of the Five Nations, the Great Plains mythologies.
Well, you also have the mythology of certain birds, like crows and ravens, are always looked upon as the tricksters, being in mythology or fable.
Right, and Odin with the three ravens, and Da Vinci with trying to make wings. From essentially like, okay, this is what birds do it. Like, you miss sometimes, Da Vinci. You hit a lot, but they all can't be winners.
He was not an anatomist, we'll put it that way. So, if he'd done a little, comparative anatomy, a little vivisection, what have you.
So all that being said, how does this work in comics? Like,
is the original X-Men. Okay, you've got Cyclops who can blast things with his optic blast as long as they're not being blocked by ruby quartz lenses, which he will remind you of constantly.
God, right?
My ruby quartz lenses.
Yeah, it's either that or that he grew up in an orphanage. Just nonstop, one or the other.
Like a redneck that got a new pair of Oakleys he's going to wear backwards on his damn hat.
But, you've got that going on. You've got Iceman, who can, like, create ice and snow and cool ice sledges and scoot around.
And this ain't your fancy angled Iceman, yo. This is bumpy Iceman. Yeah, this is tumorous Iceman.
Hey, when he would, like, stick a carrot in his face.
Right, tumorous Iceman.
Yeah. This was the fluffier, softer Iceman. And, you got Marvel Girl, who could, like, do whatever the hell she wants.
Essentially.
She's Marvel Girl.
Right.
And then you have... you've got in Beast even, he's got like acrobatic, but he's also pretty tough and everything. And then you got Angel it's obvious why when Stan Lee created the X-Men that Angel is the rich kid.
Right.
Because Daddy's going to put him in there whether he's worth it or not. Tactically, Angel sucks.
He really does.
He's only there because Dad's putting up the tuition for all the rest of the team.
Let me put this into perspective. I want you to go out and find a sparrow. And then I want you to take that sparrow and I want you to strap an 8-pound weight to it and see if it can fly. It ain't going to fly, Angel. Well, you ain't going to pick anybody up.
It could have like two sparrows could carry a coconut on them. They grip it by the husk. But, it's just, there has to be something more to Angel than just flight, but there never was. And somehow he gets to be a viable member of the team. Because amongst other things, I think you get right down to it, Professor X is just a big kid at heart.
Right.
And we're like, oh, what do you do? And like, I can optic blast. What do you do? I can, like, create waves of energy, like havoc, and I can scream so loud that I can fly, yet not deafen everyone in the world simultaneously. And what do? I've got wings. That's bitchin'.
Not only that, but
because that's what I would do. Like, those are great, viable powers, but this guy's got wings.
Look at this guy. And not only that, but
he's got wings on him.
He was so cool that not only was he chosen by Professor X to be a member of his flagship team of race fighting super Martin Luther Kings, but he also then was chosen by Apocalypse to be one of his four horsemen later down the road. Like, okay, you have all these X-Men to choose from. Who do you choose? I'm going to choose Angel. Wait, you're going to choose...
Why did you choose Angel? Because it's bitchin'.
Well, when I was in gym class, I always chose the least guy first. That way it left me open for possibilities down the road. I thought I was going to get more picks, but they just stuck me with him.
Turns out there were only four.
That's right. Who knew? Like, you knew, Apocalypse. Yeah, you knew. Your name is Apocalypse.
you chose that theme?
So transparency being transparency, once we had hashed out that this was going to be a topic of conversation for Thanksgiving, I ran off to start looking at mythology and stuff like that. Cole decided to take the comic side of things, and boy, did he.
Yes, indeed. I think I lost count at some point, but I think if you look at the montages that accompany this episode, this issue, I believe, as we recorded, I believe there are easily 100 characters.
There's a lot.
And, yeah, I kept, 30, 40, 50, 70, 80. I think it's easily like 130 characters that make this up. And there was a very stringent kind of, there was a criteria that had to be met to make the montage.
Right.
And there are three distinct criteria, any one of which being met is ample.
Right.
And that was to have a bird theme, that is to say, like the Falcon.
Amen.
Or, like Phantom Eagle would be an even better example.
Why don't you reach a little further into your bag of bird holding, Cole?
So, Phantom Eagle is a good example because Phantom Eagle takes on the name and the eagle as a symbol and as a name, some characters combine, like Falcon combines both the invoking of the bird with actual wings that invoke the look and feel of a feather.
Sure.
Of a feathered wing versus like a bat-like wing or a sail-like wing.
Phoenix got to fly.
Yeah, Phoenix was a good example because we would even allow in the mythology to the point where I even included a character from E-Man.
Why?
Which was a parody. Because they did a parody of the X-Men, and their Phoenix was the Albatross.
Nice.
And effectively, her costume looked like Jean Grey's, except the Phoenix symbol was oriented upside down.
So I have some questions for you. First of all, we should say that we're working on a contest for this. So we're not going to give away, we're not just going to go through a litany of all the names of the
Absolutely. Yeah, I guess we've said though that you had to have either the name of a bird.
Right.
Like the penguin. You had to have a bird's wings like the aforementioned angel or hawk, the various hawk family.
Sure.
Or you had to have
of the Poughkeepsie Hawks.
Yeah, but you had to have either like the penguin is a good example of one that takes on the name of the bird but doesn't invoke the bird.
Where certain affectations of the bird.
Yeah. Well, I guess if you take the tuxedo like, but an example or a character who has the bird name. Most commonly, eagles and hawks tend to get paired with other words, and you might just have a guy that runs around in camouflage and has big guns. He might call himself Killer Hawk or something like that, and have no other nothing. He doesn't have a chest symbol that looks like a hawk or anything else. So those were the criteria. You had to meet somewhere. You had to have invoke that kind of bird theme. And then there was one character who, because of a specific occasional attire, made the cut.
My favorite bird-based...
Don't we concede.
My favorite bird-based character is the bird-based character in the Muggerville 7, by the way. Well, there's two. And Muggerville 7 has the predominant bird-based character, and then a secondary bird-based character, and that is I'll let you unveil the first one. But
yes,
this,
I think if we were discussing as we began to build this. This episode, this issue, it occurred to us that Muggerville actually did have a winged character of their own. And this was none other than Turducken.
Oh, Turducken.
Turducken, who
forged in the triple fires.
Yeah, that's right. Of Thanksgiving's past, present, and future.
That's right.
Turducken is a character who, very much like Warren Worthington III, his mutant ability was that he just grew a pair of wings, which was accompanied by another pair of wings, and yet another pair of wings, each larger than the last. So as you go from like just about the nape of the neck, there's this very ineffectual little pair of chicken wings.
Right.
And then there is a larger pair of duck wings.
Sure.
And then finally, a fairly sizable, yet actual life-size, you know, normal, about the size of your biggest turkey you're bound to find in the wild, turkey wings. So with this trio, this sextet of wings, if you will, Turducken can affect a terribly awkward flight pattern.
Right, right. Because the thing about Turducken is, while he has three pair of wings, he does not have the mental ability to manipulate all three pair of wings succinctly together. He can't sync them up necessarily. So what you get is this flopping.
It's a strange sort of circular,
rigid, you know, rigor mortis-esque thing.
Yeah, and sometimes each wing isn't even flapping in sync with the other wing of the same type.
So right.
He walks around a lot, we'll put it that way.
Yeah.
He takes a lot of cabs.
He leaps about. Takes short leaps. He takes cabs. But yes, and then of course he sometimes works with Turducken, because Turducken being the primary bird based superhero in the Muggerville universe. But my favorite is he's an office worker by day, office worker by night, and that is Bird.
Oh yes,
Bird. Really, no superpowers, no real. He wanted to make our list, and the only way he knew he could make our list is by invoking the name Bird. But he decided to double down because he wasn't going to put on a costume. So he just went with Bird. So sometimes he does the taxes for the Muggerville Muggerville 7, and he's just Bird.
Yeah, he's like Andy Dufresne in Shawshank Redemption,
right? By the way, Andy Dufresne should be a character in the Muggerville 7, straight up. Except he doesn't talk. He's just narrated by Morgan Freeman all the time.
That's his power.
He's mute, but he invokes Morgan Freeman's voice, whatever
Morgan
he's thinking.
Freeman.
Oh, man.
Narration power.
So of this group of likely bird suspects that you've called the internet, the deepest reaches of the internet for, what was the most surprising of the group?
That's a hard one, because you know, one of the things that happened, of course, was that characters would come to mind, and then I'd get thinking about, well, wasn't there like a character like this? No, there wasn't. But wow, look at that guy. There was an obscure character called Vulture King.
Okay.
I found an image of, and that one was surprising because it kind of looked like a vulture with a little crown on his head, and with like people arms coming out from under its wings.
Yeah.
So it was one of the more awkward. Another one that I put in just for fun because it crossed my mind was Drinky the Crow.
Nice, with the X's. Yeah.
Yes. I gotta have Drinky in there. Oh gosh, but I'm trying to remember because it was a process to kind of come up with all these, you know, find all these characters, and over time I'm having to go back and sort of re-examine and work out the and then you know, as we talked to some people, they're like, well, you gotta have Howard the Duck, and they're like, why did I think of Howard the Duck? What's wrong with me?
That's the most patently obvious one. You do not get characters that are actually birds.
And then I ran into, I remember there being something, and you and I consulted on this. It was the Stepford Cuckoos.
Yes.
From the X-Men.
Right.
From like New X-Men or something like that, and which were a trio of characters with God only knows what powers.
Psychic-ish powers, yeah.
But then I stumbled on the Skylarks, which were a trio of assassins who went after Green Arrow.
They were also a whip-ass, just kicky 60s doo-wop trio.
So true. And then Frankie Valli came in and
ruined it for everybody. Damn you, Frankie Valli. Damn you to hell.
But I found there was a character, apparently at some point they just went stupid over at X-Men, and there was a character called Bird Brain.
Yes, there was. Yes, there was. He was like a malformed half-man, half-bird character. Am I thinking of the same one?
No, actually, you may be thinking of the Archaeopteryx-like Beak.
I am thinking of Beak.
New X-Men, who, I was just like... And then I was like thinking about... apparently there was a great horned owl who would join a later version of the Animen.
Oh, really?
Or one of my personal favorites, as far as just one of the most ridiculous characters I discovered, the Feathered Felon, who ran afoul, if you will, of Speedball, the Masked Marvel.
Oh, really?
Indeed. And then I got one of the things I got thinking about was, since feathers, bird was the word, as it were, and we're looking for our feathered friends. It occurred to me I wanted to challenge folks with a certain entire race in the X-Men.
Oh, very nice! Yeah.
And the kind of flagship character of that race. So, that was an interesting thing that sort of crossed my mind. But I was also amazed because, I'm an armchair naturalist. Armchair naturist is someone who sits around naked. I'm an armchair naturalist of sorts. So, I was constantly like, I wonder if this bird, mallard. No, thank God. No one was the mallard. There was I was amazed how many hummingbirds that there were in various comics.
Right.
I had forgotten there was sort of a counterpoint to the Justice Society that occurred in wasn't Infinity Inc. It was, what was it? There was like a World War II book that came out in the 80s or 90s.
A World War II book?
It was Golden Age period.
Was it? It wasn't the Dynamite ones, was it? With
no, this was
like
this was
the Hangman book. And all that. It was DC like, book.
I don't think it was Infinity Incorporated, but it might have been. No, because it wasn't. It was like, but it had like characters like Iron Monroe, and it was a fun book. Cause I remember following it for a while. I'd been loaned the copies of it, but at any rate, I'd forgotten that they had like the Axis power version of the Justice Society, and their kind of Batman was essentially German for horned owl.
Oh, really?
And that was an interesting kind of thing to stumble upon. And then I think it's probably the most bizarre character. And I remember when I stumbled on him again, seeing him in a list of some of the worst Batman villains ever.
Mm-hmm.
The incredibly flamboyant, artist formerly known as Prince of Batman lore, if you will, the Flamingo.
The Flamingo?
The Flamingo.
And what dare say, did the Flamingo do?
I didn't go so far as to research, because I was hot into just... I was embroiled in trying to find all of these bird characters that I could, and I kept finding more and more and more of them from all manner of sources, from like the Omega Men, the Omega Men.
Yeah.
And, from the history of characters like the Hulk. I called the Flamingo the Prince-like because the image I found is he's on this Purple Rain motorcycle.
Okay.
And just looking, he's got this little mauve outfit with his gold epaulettes, and it's just, this guy fought Batman.
This guy fought Batman. You know, that's it. Mark that down somewhere. That's going to be a future show. This guy fought Batman, because there are
That's a good point, because there have been some...
there have been so many that are just awful, awful, just random weirdness. So did you discover any recognizable patterns in your hunts for through the birds?
It's a lot of the bird theme. The bird wing is, I would wager to say, easily better than a third of the characters. Probably closer to, you know, the bulk of them would certainly fall into the category of having actual bird wings.
Right.
Or then having a wing, an artificial wing that invokes a bird wing, if not an actual real wing. And then the other one is the kind of the bird beak motif. a lot of, you know, if you're trying to get the idea of your bird theme across, very often your domino mask will have that, or your helmet, or what have you, will have a lot of avian-esque features to it.
Yeah.
And then there's even one character where I, you know, if you're glancing over the imagery, especially as we're talking, it's like, wait a minute. Because when I was putting the pictures together, I'm like, looking, okay, who flies? So here's, here's Angel, here's Hawkman, here's Sauron from the X-Men, here's Falcon. Wait a minute. It has to be bird wings.
Yep.
But there's one character, if you look at one of the panels, one of the plates of the collected imagery, you might be going, wait a minute, this guy's he don't got the bird wings. And then you might be realizing, oh, it's his name that gets him in the mix.
Who's that?
That would be from the annals from the dreadful 2099 era. None other than Bloodhawk.
Oh, no.
Of X-Men 20.
Oh, no. By the way, Bloodhawk, not a thing that actually happens in nature.
Yeah, that's so true. And glad we are of that. Many a bird watcher are glad that the Bloodhawk is not. But I really was cover the obscure. There were characters I just sort of stumbled on. Bird, for example. We spoke of, you know, Muggerville's bird.
Right.
There actually was a bird.
Oh, really?
And not, you know, Mr. Snuffleupagus's shortening of Big Bird. This bird was apparently a henchman of Bane.
Really?
A falconer who was known simply as Bird.
And it needs to be noted that as you look through this, the one thing that Cole didn't do was take any of the characters that would have come out of that would have come from some other source like a cartoon and then came into comics and then put them in the list just because if he were to do that, that would easily at least, you know, make his work harder by half to include that in this. It's not a slight.
I would have missed more of them than I found.
Yeah, it's not a slight against.
I wouldn't begin to know where to look. But also, I kind of one of the criteria became it had to have already been in the comics.
Okay.
That's why you're not going to find the Raptor guy from G.I. Joe, or you're not going to find the Silverhawks, even though they all had comic incarnations.
So what of the birds? This show's for the birds. I've been waiting to make that joke for 3 weeks now. Of the birds that you have culled the depths for, and in your vast experience with comics, what's your favorite bird character? I guess and why?
Wow, like, that's a good
yeah.
Say, you know, where does one begin?
Right.
Because you know. That is an interesting question, because one of the things that amazed me is, you know, the more I got thinking about this, I got thinking about the kind of the bizarre way that principally when you look at the bird character, more often than not, your rapacious birds of prey
right.
are the theme.
Oh, they're the go-to, yeah.
They're the order of the day, you know, and God knows that when the 90s Hawk and Dove, they made great use of that, dragging out every bird of prey name they could think of. I mean, who outside of ornithological circles had even heard of a kestrel?
Oh, God, the kestrel. I forgot about the kestrel. Yes, the kestrel.
Shrikes and falcons and owls, and I was amazed that certain, you know, there was like a, there's a hawk owl who I think was the character from the Ultimate. Oh, remember that they had that little thing where it was like the Ultimate something or other. It was sort of like outside the Ultimates. It was kind of a Batman ripoff thing that Marvel did.
Yeah. With the, not the Midnighter. It was a part of Marvel Max, and I can't think of the character that was. But yes, you're right. I know what you're talking
about.
But
I was amazed that there were certain species that weren't ever used.
Oh.
But, you know, but your hawks, your owls, your falcons, your, you know, the, your various species of those are always invoked. But gosh, it's a favorite. That's a hard call.
Well, throughout time, and you know, you've been. See, if I were to name your favorite, it would probably be something between Hawkman, Howard the Duck, and Owlman
I'd have to say I have a fondness for Owlman because somehow, you know, he pulls that off. And you know, from the original incarnation where it was little more than just an attempt to be very Batman-like to the more modern interpretations where he's got that cool kind of owl invoking armor.
Right.
But I think I'd be remiss by saying, I guess my top character in this whole bunch would have to be Night Owl.
Okay.
Because, you know, I have that much more intimate familiarity with the character, of course, from just being immersed in Watchmen, and I just really like everything about the way that character works in a combination of Batman and Blue Beetle, and also the sort of the unlikely crime fighter that he's almost becoming a crime fighter is a great big FU to his dad.
Right. Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think the coolest thing, when you were talking about the Birds of Prey, one of the coolest things and one of the laziest things that you can do as a comic creator is base a character on a bird. Because the early inception and iterations of your character sort of write themselves. If you're gonna have a Seahawk. Okay, well, he's going to be bird-like. He's going to be from the sea, and he's going to be a bird of prey. So he's going to, you know, it kind of writes itself after a fashion. But I think my favorite, and we were talking about this before, and I think it's always been my favorite, would be Black Talon from Brother Voodoo. Because damn it, if he can't pull off that costume, is Falcon
can dress like a chicken?
Is exactly. And still in strike fear into the hearts of, but is Falcon, because Falcon went for the trifecta. Falcon went with the I'm going to name myself after a bird, I'm going to have wings like a bird, and I'm going to have some form of the ability to communicate with birds on a weird telepathic level.
And have a bird companion, actually an actual physical real bird.
Right. That is amazing. I was scared. I was really scared because I've been a fan of Falcon for a long time. And one thing that Captain America's kind of stable of helpers and sidekicks and you know buddies has never been has had a big bunch of superpowers. You never had these superty duperty, like D-Man, who was strong and stenchful, and then you had you had like Nomad. You know, they all were like peak physical human condition, and sometimes they were infused with super soldier serum, but they were never like, you know, they never had any kind of weird unique power set, and Falcon did. Falcon had the ability to speak telepathically with birds. And recently, Aquaman of the Sky, and recently they reintroduced us to Falcon and gave him the mantle of Captain America, and I was really worried because he's one of my favorites. Captain America is, you know, in my top three favorite comic book characters, and Falcon is probably in my top 10 favorite comic book characters. And I was a little worried that what they were going to end up doing, by the way, when they release that 3 3/4-inch Falcon figure, that's going to be the shiznit. I cannot wait for a bird and a shield in the same package with a Falcon figure. But I was scared that they were going to back away from the bird powers. I was scared that they were going to take, you know, to kind of ignore that part of it in lieu of the Captain America, the more Captain America-y powers. Yeah. And in the first issues of his run as Captain America, they have him patrolling a city and him using his bird powers to kind of give him the kind of overhead grid of what's going on. Yeah, so he can kind of by satellite watch every part of the city because there's birds everywhere. So he can get reports on evil doings going down from the birds. So I'm really glad that they kept with the bird theme with Falcon.
Absolutely.
Now, what's your worst? What's the worst bird in your opinion?
Wow. Gosh, yeah. The worst bird. I mean, technically the worst bird, absolutely. Unequivocally would have to be Lobo the Duck, but that's taking the easy road. So, historically speaking, I mean that bird brain from X-Men was just like, really, we're going here.
Never mind. I just found the flamingo picture.
Oh, yes. Spotted him in the. It's like one of those word searches, only with pictures.
Well, what Flamingo was, if you want a little backstory, okay. Is when they were doing, when Grant Morrison was doing the club of the Batman Club of Heroes run, which was a throwback to the Man of Bats.
Okay. Yes.
The whatever the name of the South American Mexican Batman with the sombrero and the whip. But he was the villain of that Mexican. He was the villain of that iteration of Batman. Yes. So but as he was getting Batman Incorporated together and putting this together, all these Bat villains, the Japanese Bat villains and the British Bat villains.
So they all
villains.
Have their equally ridiculous rogues galleries.
Exactly. And he was the Mexican Joker, as it were.
Oh, okay. Well, see, that's pretty clever.
But I do like your reference to him looking like Prince.
Yeah,
it
was very deliberate there on the part of the artist.
It never dawned on me until, because I've read those books, I'm a big fan of the Grant Morrison Batman runs, and it never dawned on me that that's what we were looking at there until I just looked at it again. Kudos, my friend, for having a good eye to pick that out. That's pretty amazing.
Absolutely. Oh, gosh, but really probably the most ridiculous character I came across. And I'd actually stumbled on this character years and years before in a overview of Marvel Comics, and that was the very obscure Captain America villain, the Parrot.
Oh, man.
And
really?
The Parrot is, I mean, he's got this poor guy, he's got, like, you know, gigantic hook nose, and his chin kind of bends upward toward his nose, and he's just, you know, he probably the storyline was he was so hideous he had to turn to evil.
Right, and there wasn't a American Horror Story Freak Show to get cast on.
Exactly, it's like, you know, if I must look like a parrot, then I will become the parrot of your nightmare. Didn't Hemingway have a book called Parrot of Your Nightmare?
I think he did. Later, he wrote it much later in his life.
Later in life, in the home,
Robert Frost's Morphean Parrot Opus.
Yeah, so it was sort of Wordsworth or something.
Yeah,
like
it was
that.
Thoreau's least popular.
Yeah,
just, Trieste.
I actually took his name off of that.
He did. He actually wrote Hemingway's name on it to have it published.
You bastard! But it was the parrot. Quite a while back, I was trying to describe the parrot to somebody from this image that I could see in my head. I could see the cover. It was a cover of a Captain America, from like the 40s or something. And I couldn't find that image anywhere. And then when I started putting this together, boom, there it was. I'm like, how did I search? And, you know, like there's somebody online who has made like these strange sort of cartoony images of like every character ever. Because every search, I will find their version. And I don't know if it's like this, draw your character engine just putting the details in, or somebody's just gone to the trouble of, like, I'm going to draw every character in my style.
Right. Well, he did one of those 365-day challenges, and it kept going. That's poor guy.
But I did actually find in the montage is an abridged version of that cover, and it's basically this parrot guy with a big knife menacing a bunch of tied and gagged beauties in giant bird cages as Captain America busts in to, you know, make probably get a little another dose of the ugly stick there.
Right.
But, you know, the guy obviously, you know, hit the every branch on the way down the ugly tree. But it just... Hey,
nobody ever said all mutants were pretty, man. That's the misnomer in the superhero world. Man, I wish I was a mutant. Then I'd look like Jean Grey and have the ability to turn off everybody's... No.
Sometimes you just wind up with a big schnoz.
What do you think Genosha is? It's where they put the ugly mutants to die.
My guess is, you know, if I was going to write the parrot today, I would give him also the ability to mimic flawlessly. So, like, you know, he could call people up and become their husband. You know, he sees their husband going off to have a tryst, and so he calls up, I've been kidnapped. And then, you know, the police listen, that's his voice, all right.
The problem with that is he immediately goes from being a bird-based villain. You know, it's sort of like what the calculator became later in his career, where he used to wear a giant calculator and, like, menace Batman. Right, so he immediately becomes the guy that they call, that the supervillain community calls on to make hostage phone calls or lure calls or trap calls.
Or this is the president of the United States calling.
Or just when the supervillains get drunk and need to prank call people.
Call Parrot up. You know, oh, God. All right, look. Yeah, I'll be over. You know, what's he going to do? He has no friends. He's willing to be just this...
Right, or he's really excited about doing it. Yeah, of course I'll do it. Does that mean I get to come over to the jewel heist this weekend? Sure, it's at this address. It's not there. Nobody's there. The cops are waiting on him.
There's like an abandoned pawn shop.
It's like, son of a bitch, they got me again. Parrot. I think for me, it's the owl. From
Daredevil.
From Daredevil, just the worst. The only powers he has is being mildly nefarious, having a weird Wolverine-like haircut, only he finished it off with the actual beard. You know, he had the chops and the hair, which if you were just to put the goatee onto Wolverine, he would have an owl-shaped... Yeah. Thing going on. And then he got some of those really bad, like Bobby was talking about on our live show, some of those really bad knuckle knives that you can buy, like that they sell at Bill Goodman's Gun and Knife Show. You know,
it's like the tiger claw from the Far East.
Right, the Enter the Dragon tiger claw. And he called himself a supervillain, managed to rustle up some money.
Well, and he wears this sort of foppish kind of Hammer horror. You know,
good,
like if you
yes, good.
Hammer Horror Studios and went through their wardrobe, there'd be like 40 of this style.
Good analogy. It's exactly right.
Yeah, it's like some sort of Victorian cloak cape motif outfit with a giant, and apparently it wears like this giant bow, like, you know, it's red, I'll give you that, but if you colored it blue and put him in a sailor suit, he'd be like a little kid from 1910.
He'd be an extra from just, Anything Goes.
There's so many things that are wrong with him, and apparently he's outfitted his cape, if I remember from reading Marvel Universe like 30 years ago, with like these, it can kind of like stretch out like Batman and the Keaton Batman, you know?
Right, it kind of flexes out, pop, pop,
like,
pop.
Like umbrella veins in it or something.
Right.
So you can kind of glide around for short distances.
Marvel, given old dude's wings since 1942.
And the icing, the piece de resistance, the icing on this cake of bad, this MacArthur's Park.
This Flavian nightmare that we're witnessing
is much like Dr. Octopus. he is possessed of that classic of Marvel Comics, the derivative name Leland Owlsley, if I remember correctly.
Well, yeah, don't really have a choice.
I haven't gone to look
point.
This up just yet, but I remember his last name being Owlsley.
It would be like if it was Unbreakable and Mr. Glass was giving his final speech, but he was giving it way too close to a flight of stairs. You know, every hero needs a villain. I've always been. And then Bruce Willis just kicks him down the flight of stairs.
Right.
That's the way I imagine his life being, just all the time. I think I saw one, because I was a pretty ravenous Daredevil reader back in the day.
Oh my god, I actually, 30 years later, I remember Leland Owlsley was his name.
Good lord, man. That's why they do that with the names. That's the Stan Lee was a genius, and I guarantee you Stan Lee had something to do with
that
name.
That's what made such a... That kind of playful naming.
Right.
That belonged to a different age.
But I don't...
stuck with it. But, that kind of playful naming gave us one of the best lines in superhero moviedom.
Which
superhero cinema.
Which was.
And that's from J. Jonah Jameson talking about, you know, the irony of a guy named Octavius getting four extra limbs.
Yeah.
But I thought, thank you, yes, you're addressing this.
But I read Daredevil fairly ravenously, and I don't remember a time when the owl ever had more than, let's say, two henchmen and got near close. Got within a slingshot's distance of actually doing any kind of real damage. Like, at least the Superman villains, you know, were good enough to get close sometimes, or the Spider-Man villains were good enough.
They could get an upper hand from time to time, not just like earn themselves some stick time.
Right, and the only time the owl would ever shows up anymore is when there's some kind of, you know, auction of the Ultron head, and then he's
isn't available.
Right,
the parrot went to Cancun. Who'd have thought? Can you come over?
The owl shows up at an auction for, you know, some old Stark tech or an Ultron head that they found.
Exactly.
And he's got like
something. It's like the Storage Wars.
Right. And he always accidentally shows up with like two giant bags of Chuck E. Cheese tokens that he stole from a bank that it was, you know, in the wrong vault or something. So the owl by far goes for me as the worst bird. We have to start wrapping it up soon. We've been talking about
I want to point out there's two characters in the mix that I'm sure a lot of raised eyebrows initially, and then it was sort of like when I was putting all this together, I thought, oh, now here's an interesting one, because it actually fits the bill, because they're actually not one pair, but two pair, much like our own turducken, two pair of bird wings per character.
Oh, and who might that be?
That might be none other than Kissin' Cousins.
Oh,
Namor and Namor.
Oh, damn it.
I thought, I have got to have Prince Namor of Atlantis, the Submariner or Submariner, depending on how old you were when you first encountered him.
Right.
And, yes, there you have perhaps the most unique, right up there with Drinky the Crow, that managed to sneak into the montage. And I'm constantly just sort of stumbling on more and more and more.
Now, were we to believe as comic book readers that those wings were blessing either of those characters with flight?
I got the impression, I kind of always looked at them as sort of like, you know, how a helicopter has that little rear rotor.
Sure.
Rear rotor isn't doing anything to get that thing aloft. What that's there for is steering.
Okay.
So it's basically like if Superman could fly, but he couldn't steer.
Ah, all right. So he had literal, like, locomotion, but no way of...
Yeah, he could will himself into flight, but otherwise would have just had a lot of injuries.
Just continued to fly forward.
Yeah, and just be, okay, if you'd stayed in place, I could have saved you.
Lots of starts and stops. Lots of repositioning. Okay.
Yeah, a lot of lefts.
Okay, I'm with it.
Make enough left turns. You can You know, yeah, it's just a they're stabilizers, and but you can't help but wonder though with those wings, your inner right and your inner left wing are not, unless you're just flying around with your legs akimbo. very awkward flight pattern, you know. You have to be like, you know, you're straddling a pretend horse mid-flight.
Legs akimbo.
Just, there's no good way to do that without tangling your wings.
It's true. It's true.
But yet he's always depicted, you know, casually flying along, which then begs the question, the wings are just there. I mean, they probably serve zero purpose at all. They just, you know, I'd like to have them removed, but I talked to my doctor in the surgery. You know, it's that or if plasma TV. And, you know,
they're going to bench me for a year if I get these done, and I've got to...
I go exclusively barefoot, so what do I care? It's not like they're getting in the way of my socks or anything.
Here's what happened, right? He went in, had his consultation, and then this was during the Eco Warrior phase of the Namor, when he was suiting it up, right? So he shows up in this suit, and he pulls up his pant leg, and there it is, you know, the wings all a flutter. Yeah. And so he goes in and he explains, I got to have these wings removed. And he went to a mutant doctor. So the Dr. Mutie knew what was going on. They wasn't shocked or appalled by this, but as soon as he hit the point where I live 99% of my life in dirty fish shit infested seawater, the doctor's like, there is no way that this is not going to get infected.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's so true. You got the brine alone just gets into these wounds.
Right. There's no way we're going to be able to keep this clean.
You know, talk to any Marine doctor, you know.
Right, and the idea of
that amputee dolphin they made that movie about.
Exactly, I was going to say it's impossible that
out there.
That dolphin transport system that he would have to be in for a whole 6 months while it healed. You know, you can't keep a hefty bag wrapped around your leg when you're swimming to the bottom of the ocean.
That just
doesn't work.
That extra buoyancy is
it sucks. It's awful.
Prohibitive.
You know, how many leagues you have to go down before that thing just pops on its own, and then you're screwed down there. So, all right. Let's wrap this up.
We do want to pay really brief, quick tribute to the winged horses of
Kansas. Yes, the various Pegasi.
Yeah, the various Pegasi. Both Valkyrie and Black Knight have ridden astride such beasts as well as the Shining Knight.
Not to mention Thor's flying goats. While not birds, they still flew. So my hat's off to you, Trigoat.
Yes, indeed.
Triple goat.
Of course, we did mention Odin's ravens earlier, Falcon's falcon. There were a couple of bald eagles that enjoyed hanging out with Angel in his mountaintop retreat in a Marvel, God, what the hell was the name of that thing? A Marvel Age comic.
Damn it, Angel. God damn it. How could you be any worse? Angel?
Flying around. And then he had the unmitigated gall to name them Icarus and
he was Icarian, all right? If there was any kind of Icarian mythology, the Angel was always flying too close to the sun and plummeting to Earth.
If by the sun you mean the being outshone by the X-Men in everything but wealth.
Being outshone by every character. Dude had wings and endless potential, and he got outshone by Iceman and Firestar and Spider-Man and everybody else. Just, he's the worst. All right, Angel's the worst. When were you ever as a young man? Like, we're going to play X-Men. All right, I want to be Angel. Bullshit. Nobody ever said that.
You would be Hawkman before you'd be Angel.
Well, yeah, he has a mace and he's mean.
Exactly.
And
he's got
a mind for mischief.
A maul or a pointed stick. He's always got some cool ordnance with him.
And the best thing Angel had periodically was some custom fit made like silk robe that he wore around, like, welcome to the Airy. Shut up.
Yeah.
Shut up.
Well, he did actually give us one of the best lines in comics. That was from, I believe, it was when Callisto of the Morlocks. Yeah, when she took a shine to him and kidnapped him and pinned his wings up on meat hooks and tried to marry him.
Because that works.
In what my friend Steve always thought should have been titled, "With This Wing I Thee Wed."
Nice.
when he is disappeared, his girlfriend has come out and found his feathers strewn about the house there, and utters the line, "Are you molting, lover?"
Gross.
Yes, indeed. We'll put these away as down for our baby.
Oh, that's gross. It's just gross. I don't even want to think about that.
Yeah, we'll just leave you with the thought of molting Warren Worthington
III. I was looking forward to the new Captain America movie when they were calling it the Serpent Society, because I was hoping we could finally get some of these characters conceptualized as molting their snake skin. And
don't you mean conceptualized?
Conceptualized? Shit. Just shit. All right, why don't you give us some plugs?
All right, let's get on out of here. This has been a production of the Jedi Cole Universe at JediCole.com. You can write to us at jcumail@yahoo.com. You can look for us on Twitter at the Jedi Cole U. We have the Jedi Cole Universe YouTube channel, which will soon have even more fun stuff on it. And
Some other things,
and also look for Andrew and myself on the second Saturday of every month, except in December, where we're having to bump to the third Saturday because, well, that's just the way December rolls.
Right.
For Hey Kids Comics Live at deepellumonair.com.
Yeah, yeah.
Where you can also dial up the archive and see what we've been up to in past issues of that show. Our fourth issue is our Christmas wish book.
It's going to be so much fun.
And it's going to be amazing. You can check out our third issue was Kung Fools with none other than Master Bobby Blakey. And Deep Ellum on Air is also the home of the Rantcore Pit Live, which has seen 16 episodes.
Is it 16 now?
16.
Holy cow.
And then, of course, you can often find Andrew, myself, and any number of the JCU regulars at various conventions around the state of Texas, which you can find out about at Convention Awareness Project Texas at www.cap-tx.info.
There you go. So we wanted to say thank you to all of you. It is Thanksgiving, so thanks to everybody who listens to the show. Thank you to everyone who clicks on the page and reads what we write, predominantly what Cole writes, and watches what we do and comments and talks to us and so we wouldn't be doing this. Cole wouldn't be doing what he's doing.
And comes up to us at shows and
right.
Mention that we actually have an audience that we always imagined we had out there somewhere.
Right. And more and more of you are getting involved on a regular basis and thank you so much for everything that you guys do and we hope that everybody has a great Thanksgiving and has had a great Thanksgiving, because I think this comes out the day after Thanksgiving. So we hope everybody has had a great Thanksgiving at this point.
Yes, this will in fact be out on Black Friday. So thank you also for taking time out of your holiday shopping.
For sitting in traffic at a mall somewhere listening to this. We appreciate that.
Yeah, while you're camped out in front of the...
And
in fact, we'll probably just have this published early so you can download it and have it there while you're camped out in front of the Target.
That's right. So with all that being said, don't forget to buy, collect, and enjoy your comics, especially your bird-based comics. And as a reading recommendation, go out and pick up some of the new Captain America books. They came out this month, and they are they're fantastic. So go ahead and. What?
A man, papa, 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 a man, papa,